my listeners on talkradio.nyc. Welcome to episode 5 of Frank About Health. I'm your host, Frank R. Harrison. And today we are going to have a very special episode where we are being frank about narcissism. In clinical circles, they call it narcissistic personality disorder. But we're going to have a very conversationalist view of it today because I must first provide this disclaimer. I'm not a licensed psychologist, clinical social worker, or psychiatrist. Although I have a master's degree in psychology, my focus was neuroscience and basically the type of therapeutic practices that are for those suffering from epilepsy, autism, depression, bipolar disorder, and other kinds of clinical ailments like that. Therefore, I have done mainly extensive research on a personality disorder such as narcissism, but the best I can do is provide content on that whole topic, which is pretty of high interest to most of the people that I've been speaking to lately. And today's program is not to be taken as either a professional diagnosis or a conclusion, but rather insights that are into one of the most pervasive personality disorders that most of us have faced in one way, shape, or form. In order for making that discussion take place, I thought it was best that my dear friend, Danielle Swanson, who was with me on my first show, where I spoke with her about epilepsy, she will be here today to help discuss about our mutual experiences that we've had with people and situations that involve narcissism. We figured that it can provide an overview of the disorder through personal experience, just as in some reading materials that I have had shared with Danielle and some other mutual friends. And we would like to educate all you listeners out there in terms of becoming better aware of when dealing with a narcissist, what cues to look out for, what circumstances that might exist within yourself that are narcissistic in nature, and more importantly, when dealing with narcissism, what coping mechanisms can you use to be productive in those type of relationships? Danny, welcome back to Frank About Health. There's no one better that I could think of for this particular show. I know that you've been exposed to it, and you have a special guest with us this hour that has become both a victim and a survivor. And I'm looking forward to hear a lot about that in the second segment. As we were preparing for the show, I know you had a lot of questions. And again, being that most of my information is stemming from research, I figured that I would give you an overview of the conversation of narcissism. And if you had any further questions that maybe we could share as we continue this first segment.
Yeah, thanks for having me back, Frank. I'm excited to be here. Yeah, I was going to say, I don't even know if I'd call myself definitely not an expert with narcissism, because I think in some cases, had it not been pointed out to me, I might not have even known. But I think that's because narcissism itself is pretty subtle to pick up on at first, right? So maybe, do you want to define, because since you have the psychology background, what a narcissist is?
Well, sure. Let me first by starting out why they called it narcissism. In Greek mythology, there was a Greek hunter by the name of Narcissus, who literally was a hunter and the son of the river god Cephissus and the nymph Lerope. I'm not a Greek mythology student, never was, and I don't really think I plan to be. However, he was a very charismatic, some labeled him beautiful, and many fell in love with him. He only showed them disdain and contempt in kind. And the whole myth around him is that he fell in love with himself in the mirror and even saw his reflection in a pool of water and just was adoring himself. So narcissism became the appropriate term for this type of personality disorder, because in most cases, a narcissist is only interested in their own beliefs of their high self-esteem, whether it's manufactured by their defenses or whether it has just been educated to them by dysfunctional family members, or maybe the friends or coworkers that they associate with, continuing to feed on their ego. So there's a lot of self-aggrandizement, a lot of self-love, a lot of concern over status, a lot of self-esteem issues that are very volatile because they become heavily dependent on the external validation of others in order to really know who they are. So narcissism is a personality disorder because essentially during the first 5 years of life, when children are born into the kinds of parents that they're given, they either learn to individuate into their own personalities during those 5 years, or they learn to have all of their infantile needs continue to be reinforced. So, for example, when a baby is born, the only thing they know is they're taking their first breath and they're hungry and they're sleeping and they're just feeling their inner body working. And as they learn to crawl and walk and eat on their own and become toilet trained and associate with kids their own age, and the list goes on, they learn to have awareness that they need to coexist with others in order to be in the race, the human race that we're all in. When you're narcissistic, though, some of that empathy, some of that extending the boundaries of your individuality is stunted. So as such, all they can rely upon is the continued validation of their caregivers and or parents or guardians or nannies or however they're being brought up. But the dysfunction only reinforces the initial self-love that they had as infants. And by the time they get to five, it is considerable that the individual is predominantly narcissistic and will have problems in their future, you know, teenage and eventual adult relations. Now, the thing is that there are people who figure this out in time to actually get treatment for it, but that's still a rare case because the whole idea of narcissism is that there's nothing wrong with you. So why would you get treatment? You know, but at the same time, when you notice that your life is dysfunctional based on the way you feel about people around you, family, friends, or anyone else, that ego dystonic feeling, that discomfort makes you start seeking, especially since you're still young enough to learn new ways of thinking and relating to others, you start to try to find an even balance between being an eventual narcissist or someone who's able to coexist with others.
Okay. So what would be like the official definition psychologically?
Oh, okay. Well, I know that the American Psychiatric Association Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, that's the clinical DSM manual, mm-hmm. they define it as a comprising and pervasive pattern of grandiosity in fantasy, thinking, and behavior. It's a constant need for admiration and a lack of empathy for anybody, beginning by early adulthood. That's when it becomes a disorder, when you're an adult, when you're supposed to be a functioning adult, and if you still lack some of the key developmental milestones that you could have gotten prior to the age of five or during your teenage years, you get branded into the narcissistic spectrum. But of course, they all think of it as childlike mentality, childlike thinking. People are called selfish. You don't like to play well with others. The list goes on, but it's not taken as seriously until it becomes a total issue of dysfunction. You know, so it's kind of like what makes it pervasive is that it all appears out of nowhere when it's really a gradual build over the development of your childhood. So the thing is that you can only hope that when you're born into what could be a functional family and they're aware of this, they can only try to make you get trained appropriately and learn how to play well with others, learn how to identify your parents as not just caregivers and give me everything I want, but objects that need to also receive back. So there has to be that bonding, that appropriate bonding that goes on to help the individual understand that they're just not here by themselves. The world doesn't revolve around them. In the beginning, it does when they're born, but they have to learn that it may start with yourself, but it eventually has to be given back. That's the fundamental principle in how you're dealing with either a narcissistic individual or someone who's more functional.
Okay, good to know. And I think, so are there different types of narcissism or...
Well, yes, due to the nature of this show being only an hour long, we're going to talk about the most pervasive, and it's covert narcissism. Mm-hmm. But most people think overt and covert, open about it or closed about it, are the types of narcissism that exist. You may find people in your life that are overt about it. They're the power-hungry people. They're the greedy people. It's all about me. Please come to my party. If you don't even like me or you don't think my hair's on straight, then you're not invited, you know. Those are people you can tell right away are narcissistic in nature. and they're probably best not to socialize with, especially if you're the type of individual that wants to assemble in groups. The covert is where it's dangerous, because these are people that may have issues of self-love, but believe it or not, they have low self-esteem at the same time. They need constant validation. They need constant attention to know that they matter, to know that they exist even. And it's unfortunate, but while that's the most pervasive, those are the people that were most abused during their developmental years. Essentially, they may have had a missing parent, or maybe they had no parents. Maybe they were adopted. Maybe they were sent through the foster home system. Maybe they were abandoned in a shopping mall somewhere, or they were abused while with their parents. You know, whatever kind of abuse that they faced, it just made people stunt their development and as such remain self-protective. So narcissism was the way to go. It was protecting your weak sense of self. And as such, while you grow up through life, you're essentially a narcissist, but you're passive aggressive about it. So most people, when they see that kind of individual in their lives, they don't recognize it right away. And they take a look at the other aspects of that individual that is probably charming or positive, and they engage. And then eventually it all comes out in the wash, especially when they're in committed relationships, whether they're professional or personal ones.
Interesting. So it sounds like it's a case of more nurture than nature in many ways, right?
Well,
anyone who's a narcissist, depending on how they grew up.
Well, in nature, all of us as infants are born into this world where the only self-love you have is, oh my God, I exist. It's me, myself, and I. But it is the nurture part that has to make the person, boy or girl, aware that there's more people out there besides themselves. Essentially, the nurture part plays heavily on what the outcome is. But we're all born narcissistic as a means of survival and meeting our primary needs. But when you become an adult and whatever, if those other needs were not reinforced, you end up stuck in that narcissistic zone. Nature and nurture play both parts.
Okay. So as an adult, let's say, anyone could be considered a narcissist, no matter what job they had or gender they identify as, or, you know, could be a family person. It could be a businessman. It could be a pilot, like someone well-educated, someone not well-educated, anything like that, right?
Correct. And if narcissists become aware that they are and they're in professions of power, they need to learn to use it as a form of healthy narcissism. And when it comes to just simple human relationships, they have to know to tone that down and be able to coexist with others. That's the continual balance that both the narcissist and their eventual target have to learn to adapt to. You know, I think we're headed for a break, but I could tell you I am very much interested in the guest you will be bringing in the next segment, because it is a key example of covert narcissism. And I think we're going to learn a lot more versus what I've just described in technical detail. The whole aspect is being able to strike boundaries and the balance in relationships of any sort. So, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be frank about covert narcissism in the next few minutes. Stay tuned right here on talkradio.nyc. We'll be back in a bit.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you interested in having a better relationship with yourself, others, and God? Greetings. I'm your host, Dr. George Andow, for the show, A Journey Through Into Awareness. On my show, we journey into the awareness that the mind of God is the true seat of our personal consciousness.
We join together each Monday at 7 p.m. So tune in on Talk Radio NYC.
Did you know that nearly one in five adults in the U.S. battles mental illness? Hi, my name is Albert Dabba. I'm the host of the show Extra Inning. Extra Innings, I discuss the topics of wellness, mental health, and the experience of surviving multiple suicides within my family. Listen live every Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern to Extra Innings for discussions with sports figures, artists, mental health professionals, and many others. That's Monday at 6 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Everybody, thanks again. Here we are in segment two. We were talking about covert narcissism amongst the spectrum of the narcissistic personality disorder. I am now looking forward to Danny's special guest, who is going to talk about a clear-cut case of covert narcissism and how she became a victim and now a survivor. Danny, by all means, I'm looking forward to hear what you have today.
Yes, so we do have a very special guest today, someone who has lived the real life experience and overcome that, like the damage and the struggles. So our guest today is Janet. Janet, did you want to tell us a little bit about your story? I think probably a lot of people are curious, how do you even meet a narcissist? How does it all happen? How does it unfold?
Yes. Unfortunately, I'd be happy to tell you my story in hopes that you can prevent it from happening to yourself. A narcissist is a very charming, charming gentleman in my case. They say and do all the right things, adore you with compliments and attention. Even when you're not necessarily looking for it, they just know all the right things to say and do. They scout you out. Usually they're going after an empathetic person, someone who is good and kind and generous, because he himself needs that attention and support. And anyone can become a victim. And I think that is a very important point. My support group is a group of women from various socioeconomic backgrounds, education backgrounds, and it's stunning. One woman is a corporate executive. I was a mother, stay-at-home mother, but I also have a master's in public health. So I didn't consider myself a dumb or a vulnerable person, certainly not. But these men in my case are very cunning, very sly, very smart, and just shower you with anything and everything you could possibly imagine.
So that sounds like it's one of the scarier aspects, that it could happen to anyone and anyone could be a narcissist. So it sounds.
Yes.
Yeah. Difficult to pick up on. I guess, could you describe for us a little bit about how you started to realize what was happening, or how did things deteriorate? Was it all good and then all of a sudden bad?
One of the things that made me uncomfortable early on was that he kept texting and calling me and then kept pushing the relationship for a commitment, kept pushing and pushing. Then wanted to move in together, then wanted to get married, all in a very short period of time. I told him I never wanted to get married again, which had nothing to do with him. It's just something I didn't want to do. But I did agree to move in with him after 6 months. Approximately 2 to 3 weeks after I moved in with him, all those compliments, all those wonderful things that he said he liked about me and adored about me, and I was his soulmate, all went by the wayside. His behavior changed drastically. For instance, I had always loved to go to the beach. So before I moved in with him, we'd go 2 to 3 times a week. After I moved in with him, we never went again. If I didn't do what he thought, he would tell me I was sick, psychotic. He told me I didn't need to get manicures anymore. I didn't need to get pedicures. Got to the point where he said, you know, we don't have friends because of you. I said, what do you mean? I have lots of friends. He goes, no, nobody likes you. He told me I couldn't cook. Just all the things that he knew that I loved to do, he started to use against me. The cruelest part was when I would try to sit him down and say, and I'd even say, hon, you, the behavior you exhibited, the things that you're doing are very painful to me. I don't know if you realize that, but that action, those words hurt me. And sometimes I'd be crying. I'd say, so please, please don't do that anymore. Well, unfortunately, that was the wrong thing to say because I gave him the ammunition. And he had now more power and control over me because I just opened the door to what hurt me. And he continued to do it. When I would be there crying and begging, he had a blank stare, like a sociopath, just this blank stare with no emotion, none. Now, interestingly enough, he treated his daughter very similar. His son, he did not. So clearly it was an issue with women. He even treated his own mother pretty bad. But I took the brunt of it. And whenever something would go wrong, he would scream. And I do mean scream, everything is your fault. And I said, I'd laugh and say, how's that even possible? How can everything be my fault? And say, everything is your fault. So in a very short period of time, things deteriorated, but I was embarrassed. I'm thinking, oh my goodness, how could I have misread the situation? So I didn't ask for help and I didn't tell anybody because I was embarrassed and I was humiliated. And then because he's such a charmer and everyone thought he was such a catch, I was afraid to tell anybody. I thought nobody's going to believe me because if you met him, he's Mr. Charming. And he could easily, which he did, convince people she's sick, she's mental, she's jealous, she's sensitive, she's psychotic, she's got problems. So I became more and more fearful. I began to doubt myself. I began to feel hopeless and helpless. I didn't know where to turn, what to do. I had never experienced this kind of behavior in my life, ever.
Thank you for sharing. So it sounds like by being honest and trying to fix the situation, it made it worse.
It did make it worse, yes, because he narrowed in on my weaknesses. You know, my head was spinning. I was terrified. There was emotional abuse, psychological abuse, and financial abuse. The physical abuse came later. And when that happened, that was one of the first big red flags. And I said, oh my God, this is abuse. Because we never think of psychological, emotional, or verbal as abuse, but it is. And I will actually say the psychological and emotional is much more damaging than the physical in my case. I still have a lot of PTSD. My fellow survivors, we suffer a lot with PTSD because we were gaslighted. I would say, why did you do that? He'd say, I didn't do that. I said, yes, you did. So you're second guessing yourself. You're just going crazy. You think you're ready to go to a mental hospital. And I've had friends in their survivor group whose husbands got them admitted because they were doctors. So this can happen. It's very difficult, very painful. What got me out of it was the pushing me down and hurting me, and also two other times where he tried to kill me. And I thought, he's going to kill me if I don't get out of here. He's going to kill me. And I found the courage to tell him the relationship was over. And Again, I probably should have left at that moment, but I didn't. I said, you either buy my share of the house out or we sell the house. And he said, I'll buy you out. And a month later, he still hadn't said a word. And I said, hey, what's going on? He goes, what do you mean what's going on? I said, are you buying me out? Where do we stand? He goes, I can't afford to buy you out. And that's another thing narcissists do. They snicker, they snare, they glare at you. And I said, well, when the hell are you going to tell me? And he just looked at me with no emotion, no emotion. So I took some steps to put the house on the market. And for several nights, he baited me. He said, you get out of this house. And I said, no, I am not getting out. I found the strength to stand up for myself. He continued to bait me and taunt me. I did the best I could to stay away from him. And then one night he really, really taunted me. And him and I were having an argument, and I saw the look in his eye that I'd seen when he had physically hurt me. So I slapped him in the face and ran upstairs and locked myself in my daughter's room. I stayed there all night, and at 6 a.m. the next morning, I heard him leave. So I said, oh, my goodness, I'm safe. So I came down and had some coffee, and around 8:30, 9 o'clock, the doorbell rang, and it was the police. And I got so upset, I thought, well, police don't come to your door unless someone has been in an accident or is dead. And I thought he'd been in a car accident, and I was so upset. I said, oh, my God, is he okay? He okay? And they said, are you? And they asked who I was, and I said, he goes, and they said, what happened last night? And I'm thinking, why are they talking about last night? Did someone die? Why is the police here? Long story short, I admitted that I slapped him, and I was arrested for domestic violence and went to jail. He set me up.
That's wild.
And that is how it ended, but that is also what saved my life. Because if I had not been arrested, I still would have stayed and fought for the house and everything else. And he would have found some way to kill me.
Janet, you are literally sending chills through my spine from the perspective that everything I was talking with Danny about in our first segment of the show, you have just defined from practical experience. I was going to summarize the show with everything you've just done. I mean, narcissism is the most insidious, because when others engage themselves with these people, yes. I mean, I'm saying the type of people that unfortunately you were engaged with at that moment in your life, the whole process of gaslighting is enabled in order for the covert narcissist to thrive. They lack an identity. You're the object of their identity so they can feel that they exist. Right. I mean, all of it is about lack of sense of self, lack of self-esteem. And yet, ironically, they think you're the psychotic one. Yes. I mean, you have to bear with me. I'm literally processing everything as I'm trying to summarize everything you've just said. There's so much more I want other people to take away from this, but I see we're about to go to another break. So overall, before we go to a break, I just want to make one final statement. There is so much overlap with those that have clinical illnesses that either serve as the trigger or the result of the narcissistic personality. And I thank you, Janet. I thank you, Danny, for introducing me to this woman, because this is exactly the kind of things I want to share with my listeners out there. But more importantly, I'm going to let everyone else know the resources they can turn to when we get back after these messages. Thanks for being here on Frank About Narcissism.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host a program, Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a business owner? Do you want to be a business owner? Do you work with business owners? Hi, I'm Stephen Fry, your small and medium-sized business or SMB guy, and I'm the host of the new show, Always Friday. While I love to have fun on my show, we take those Friday feelings of freedom and clarity to discuss popular topics on the minds of SMBs today. Please join me and my various special guests on Friday at 11 a.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Do you run or are ready to open your own business? Hi, I'm Jeremiah Fox. I've been operating and opening small business for the last 25 years, and I'm the host of the new show, The Entrepreneurial Web. Tune in every Friday at noon Eastern Time for insights and stories on the nuances of running small business right here on Fridays at noon, talkradio.nyc.
I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Wise Content Creates Wealth. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Friday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2. They say content is king. Well, wise content rules the world. Every episode features tools and tips for content marketing and business people telling the wise content stories of that success. Tune in every Friday from 1 p.m. to 2 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Welcome back to Frank About Health, here with both Janet and Danielle Swanson talking about a very important case of covert narcissism. As I said before we went to break, it is an issue where the narcissist lacks an identity. Apparently, I don't know much about this individual in his childhood years, but he was probably brought up in a very abusive home and as such learned to compensate by becoming successful at whatever his career choice was at that time. But to actually scapegoat Janet into being the victim and the target of all of his own issues that were never resolved is clearly all of the emphatic examples of what a covert narcissist does. Essentially, they don't have a sense of self. There's silent rage. There's pathological lying. There's constant criticism. There's jealousy. They project their issues onto you. Their words don't match their actions. They are emotionally disconnected. They take credit for your ideas. They withhold praise and recognition. They sabotage birthdays, holidays, vacations, and other meaningful milestones. They belittle you and try to teach you lessons. They're really looking for the education for what they lack, in my view. That is a form of marginalization. Self-focused and emotionally immature. They use people. They create drama. They have no desire to know who you are. They create stories in their heads. They engage in control and manipulation as if they're drinking water. They're gaslighting, triangulating, deflecting focus, distorting reality, blaming others, mixing messages. And unfortunately, Janet, you were involved in a process that is known as hoovering.
Yes.
There you were, about to find your freedom to actually sell that home and fight for your life, which is, of course, your right to do. And all of a sudden, he's not going to sell his home, or rather the home that you both bought into. He's not going to make any actions that he said he was going to do because he sees you're taking charge of your life. And that is definitely what a covert narcissist never wants to see, because what it does to them inside is it validates the fact that they don't feel that they matter or that they exist. What is really so much of a conundrum in this is that when anyone is looking, especially the victim, at a covert narcissist, they see someone who's treacherous, who is deceitful, who's almost pathological or even a criminal. But it's really tragic because the person is a victim in their own right. They don't know who they are. Their lives are based on everyone else around them. And this is so covert because, yes, the charm is there, wasn't self-deprecating. But as soon as there was the commitment of sharing the same space with each other, there was like, okay, I got to fight for a sense of self now. And all bets were off on any kind of normalcy or rationality. So why I'm actually taking what you've just shared over the last segment as something, as a real case study that a lot of people out there need to be more aware of as they go through their own lives personally and professionally. Well, I still want to know more about how you were eventually able to get out of your legal problems that that resulted from this, or even how your survivors group has been able to keep you as a survivor, even though the hoovering, I'm sure, still exists, correct?
For them, for a lot of people, it did. I am out. And like I said, thank God I was arrested. And I had been at the dermatologist one day, and I just, for whatever reason, told my dermatologist about it. And she had the name of a support group. And I am forever indebted to the Domestic Violence Services Network here in Boston, because I went there and they would take the words out of my mouth. I didn't have to worry about not being believed. They knew everything that I was going through. They're a tremendous source of comfort. And thank God I still came out with a decent sense of self after a while. But my goal, which continues, is to educate other people so that this never happens to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And we do speaking engagements either via Zoom or in person. And a lot of the survivors, including myself, get up and tell our stories. And it's very powerful, very powerful.
And you're based in Boston, is that correct?
Domestic Violence Services Network. DVSN.
Awesome, awesome. I definitely, DBFM.com?
DVSN. It's an acronym.
Okay, awesome. Awesome. I definitely am going to let our viewers know about that as a resource in addition to others that are available here in New York where I'm from. But the thing that I find interesting is that being that narcissism is pervasive unto itself and most people have one form of it or another, I think that any survivor of a narcissistic relationship is going to require a group of some sort, you know, because everybody has been a victim in various ways, depending on the nature of the relationship they were involved in. I mean, Danny, you had said to me earlier in the first segment of the show, you had asked me about nature versus nurture, and also just about narcissistic people existing in everyday life. I mean, we do see them in everyday life. The lawyers, the politicians, the businessmen, entrepreneurs, pastors, law enforcement officials. I mean, we can have conversations and episodes of Frank About Health on that alone. But the thing is that is an example of when they're using it constructively and for the greater good. I think what the narcissist needs to learn is that, okay, you've got an illness that needs treatment and there is a medication available for it, but it also can be used as an asset if it's thought of highly. I think one fundamental aspect of any individual with narcissism is the quality or degree or timing of education that they've had throughout their adult life. Essentially, if you have more high quality education and constant learning of various things in your career or even in your relationships, or if they have good therapists, I think most people who have some form of, I wouldn't call it mental disorder, but let's just say personality disorder, would best always do a reality check by having a therapist by them, by their side. That's when you can learn as the target to be a survivor, stay one, educate and advocate. And if you are the narcissist, to use it in the time when it's necessary and don't abuse it. I mean, it is fundamental in terms of we all learn first about our self needs and then we give back, like I said earlier. But that goes the same with illnesses. You know, if you have a mental disorder or personality disorder in this case, try to leverage it as an asset of your character so that you can actually use it for the greater good. That's a challenge that I'm sure a lot of people are going to have a struggle to try to find even in the near term. You know, all of us have just coming out of COVID-19 unto itself. We're all learning how to be living life normally as we used to. So that in itself has to be taken into consideration. But is there anything else, Janet, that you wanted to share about your experience with him?
I think I would like everyone to know that there is help out there. And if you are a victim or survivor, I know that sense of helplessness, embarrassment, and shame, but no, it is not your fault. These men are extremely brilliant in manipulating people, and they're cunning and they're sly, and I just can't say enough bad about them, the evil that they have inside, but you are not alone. It is not your fault.
Mm-hmm. And I think in all fairness to the individual narcissist, ironically, they're not alone. There are a lot of other narcissists like them as well. But the thing is that there just has to be more ability for communication and help in the development when they're in their younger years, so that hopefully we can somehow diffuse this. But I gather it's one of those ongoing issues that will continue to exist over time. It's just that I guess the onus is on the victim to really learn how to master not only how to detect a narcissist in the beginning to avoid becoming engaged in something that could be fatal, God forbid, but at the same time to also be mindful if they are involved in it, how to use it and learn from it and be as productive as possible. You know, I can talk about my own personal experience with narcissism from the perspective of being a person with epilepsy. I'm always mindful and vigilant about my own body. How am I feeling today? Am I about to have an aura? Am I about to have a seizure? Is there some kind of twitching going on in my nervous system? Those are cues that happen to me when I know something is not operating on full capacity during a given time. What I think I've learned just over time is that as a result of being someone who lives with a chronic illness like epilepsy, I also have become a target because, like what I've talked about with Danny on our first show, you know, epileptics for decades, for centuries, have always been misunderstood based on being possibly with some mental illness or being a drug addict or having witchcraft or possession, demonic, who knows? I mean, a lot of misrepresentation. So as such, we become easy targets for the narcissist. But what I guess we also have the advantage of being always mindful of our bodies is we can detect and sense if something is not right about another person. I know I can. I mean, I think, Danny, you and I have spoken about that you've been able to detect that as well much easily in narcissistic individuals we've come across in our time. But the thing is that it really begins with yourself from being aware of your environment, the people in it, and how you're able to go ahead and try to acclimate to the circumstance you're involved with. I guess we're about to head to another break. I have some closing remarks, and I think, Danny, you and I should definitely bring out all the resources available to our listeners out there in the coming segment of Frank About Health. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be back after these messages right here on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
Are you a small business trying to navigate the COVID-19 related employment laws? Hello, I'm Eric Sauver, employment law business law attorney and host of the new radio show, Employment Law Today. On my show, we'll have guests to discuss the common employment law challenges business owners are facing during these trying times. Tune in on Tuesday evenings from 5 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
The new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for this very interesting episode of Frank About Health. We've been frank for the last 45 minutes with the case of Janet and her experience with covert narcissism. Danny, I thank you for bringing this guest to this episode. I've been sitting here like a student learning more about what I already thought I learned. Do you have any other thoughts about narcissism that you wanted me to cover? Because I think Janet really covered all the bases.
I did have two questions for the both of you, actually, since you both had, let's say, firsthand experiences with narcissists. I think both of you wanted to find ways to help others not end up in the same situation. So do the two of you want to list maybe the top three ways of recognizing a narcissist or being in a narcissistic relationship of some kind or another? I know there's lots of them, but for time's sake, I'm thinking maybe each of you can list the three top ones you'd consider.
I think in a romantic relationship, a rush to commitment, jealousy, and telling you things like, I've never met anyone like you, someone who mirrors your hopes, your dreams, and your weaknesses, like, oh my God, you're amazing. Those would be my top three.
I'm coming from the similar perspective, but also remember, as you know, Danny, with living with epilepsy for most of my life, I listen to my body in every way, shape, and form. My mind, my instincts. I have this thing that I think I told you once where if I meet a new person and they remind me of someone in the past that I can actually visualize in front of me that has done me wrong, I immediately don't trust the person. So sometimes my own memory works with that. Sometimes when I'm dealing with a narcissistic individual, my times have been predominantly in business dealings or even amongst, personal relationships, but not necessarily intimate ones. The thing is that I have this sensation in my gut that something is wrong, like as if something is going to explode or my life is in danger. I have the flight or fight response sometimes when I meet new people who do some of the behaviors that Janet had indicated. I have been gaslit a lot. I can recognize it so quickly that at this point, it doesn't even faze me. And I know when someone is twisting stories to redefine the truth when they don't even know what the truth is. You know, so sometimes what I do is I mirror back what I refer to as, I hate to use the word loosely as just stupidity, but if it's clear to me that it's gaslighting, I just gaslight back. So I would have to say, one, listen to your body and instincts and gut, which is all the same thing. Two, recall your past experiences with individuals. If they come to you in dreams or even in flashback memories as you meet new people, listen to that as an indicator. And the third one is also be realistic about what narcissism exists within yourself. And if this is an individual, like in professional circles, there are people with healthy narcissism that you have to deal with for whatever professional reason. Learn how to give back what they're giving to you. And that's how you're defining the relationship. At least make it less intimate, but more productive.
Okay. And then my one other question for the two of you, because I think it's probably something you could both answer. And Janet, you touched on this earlier, is how important do you think it is to find or identify someone who you think will believe you once you've realized what's going on, you know, or I know it's probably complex, but.
No, it's actually, that's, if I did not find someone who believed me in the time frame that I did, I don't know what would have happened to me. I went to this domestic violence services network to a counselor. I didn't want to go. I was humiliated. I was embarrassed. I was ashamed. I thought, I'm 60 some odd years old. How can this happen to me? I'm not a stupid person. And I was blaming myself, which is exactly what he had been doing to me for 4 years. If it weren't for that counselor, I don't know that I could have turned my life around. The value of the domestic violence counselors and groups is invaluable. That is what saved my life.
Yeah, I have the feeling that this all comes under the heading of resources for a lot of people to make sure that they learn from your case. And if they are right now currently living in that kind of dysfunction, they try to take away like an action item list that they can make for themselves in order to really go forward with whatever strategies they need to put into place to save their life or even possibly save their relationship if it's not in the extreme circumstance that yours was. I mean, I basically am referencing a book called The Covert Passive Aggressive Narcissist, which I bought in 2018 by Debbie Mirza. I don't know her personally. I understand her background is that she's a life coach and a survivor of having been living with a narcissist. And she learned all about how self-love is very empowering, especially when dealing with trying to recover from that kind of life experience. I mean, from that book, the kind of takeaways that I did is that I realized that it was important to me to have a therapist, a lawyer, and other kinds of doctors by my side while still dealing with narcissism in various personal or professional relationships or dealings, I should say, because I think while I've still been trying to recover from other epilepsy circumstances or other health-related circumstances that have happened to me over the years, I'm also trying to be mindful that if I'm going to engage in a long-term commitment going forward with the right person, there has to be a mutual exchange of communication and boundaries and trust and shared resources, and even to talk openly about any one of mine or that other person's narcissistic tendencies so that we can collaborate them rather than beat each other up with them. I mean, those are the kind of things that I took away from that book. So I would recommend anyone who wants to get that book. It's available on Amazon.com. And I basically find it to be one of the most non-evasive modes of education and information, especially if you're not fortunate enough to have a psychologist to turn to. I personally know of psychologists and clinical social workers and a psychiatrist that could be a resource for people here in the New York area. But if people are interested in a referral, the best I could do is give my Gmail account, frankabouthealth102@gmail.com, where they can reach me for any other insight information. We all learn, especially when recovering from any kind of illness, but more importantly, something like narcissism, that sometimes telling yourself those famous sayings can sometimes help you in grasping with some sense of reality testing. I think mantras that I use sometimes in trying to affirm my motivations when meeting new people, both personally and professionally, is I keep saying things like, to thine own self be true. If you can't be true to yourself, then forget meeting anybody. That's the way I look at it. And I think I try to be frank about everything that I can be to anybody that I am meeting. We're not perfect people, but we try to use whatever skills that we've learned in life to meet the right people going forward. I know that a main takeaway for me is that if you've had experience with narcissism or have traces of it in yourself, aside from having a good therapist by your side, you need a good support network, especially from parents, family, cousins, your children, your nephews. I have two nephews that one of them has been coming to me to support me lately, which I find very, very hopeful in terms of the future. And I think it's just something that we all have to be mindful of. If we didn't know that we had it, then part of the constant movement is to go seeking out through your own personal network to continue to heal, as well as your support network, Janet, that you're continuing to evolve. Also, if you have a strong religious ethic, to learn how to harness faith and hope can keep a balance between what you know and what you feel. Narcissistic personality types do not have a balance of life living in the gray area. That's one of the big fundamental issues. And guess what? Life is a gray area. We can look at COVID-19, for example. I always have a caveat, though. Be mindful of those that use religion as the answer to everything, because that in itself is another example of what could be either covert or overt narcissism. I know that overall, finding, you know, mental health issues are sometimes a comorbidity to something deeper, whether it's a physical issue or a bad relationship or just lack of communication or education or just maybe just not being brought up under the right circumstances. I think that's an ongoing issue that we're all going to face as the years go by. But I just continue to believe that shows like this, shows like The Conscious Consultant, which is here at talkradio.nyc, shows like Planet Pakalolo, which is coming on after this show, shows about how to, you know, show your relationship with God that I know is available on Mondays, Journey to Awakenings. I have found that this network in itself has been therapeutic for me in hosting the show, but also in dealing with the many issues that we've all been dealing with, such as narcissistic personality disorder. Everybody's going to see a narcissist in the workplace, within families, and obviously within relationships. But if you're able to hone in on narcissism within yourself, then you'll be able to see from those signs in yourself when you're faced with another person and either learn to work with them or not deal with them at all. It seems as though we're about to end this show. I'm sorry, Janet. This is worth two shows, in my opinion. Maybe at a later date, as I learn more about your survivors group, and everybody, if you want to know more about that, you can also email me at frankabouthealth102@gmail.com. But I see we are about to sign off now and go on to Planet Pakalolo. So anybody wants to learn more about the crazy weeds out there, stay tuned for Johnny Tsunami at 6 p.m. right here on Talk Radio NYC. I'll be back next week with another show. Thanks for listening and signing off, and hope to see you soon. Thanks for coming, Janet and Danny.
Welcome.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
I'm a Kansas consumer.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I am Joseph Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Wise Content Creates Wealth. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Friday afternoon from 1 p.m. to 2. They say content is king. Well, wise content rules the world. Every episode features tools and tips for content marketing and business people telling the wise content stories of that success. Tune in every Friday from 1 p.m. to 2 on talkradio.nyc.
Hey, all you listeners looking to boost your business, why not advertise on Talk Radio NYC with very reasonable rates? Interested? Simply send us a message on our website, talkradio.nyc.
Do you love or are you intrigued about New York City and its neighborhoods? I'm Jeff Goodman, host of Rediscovering New York, a weekly show that showcases New York's history and its extraordinary neighborhoods. Every Tuesday live at 7 p.m., we focus on a particular neighborhood and explore its history, its vibe, its feel, and its energy. Tune in live every Tuesday at 7 p.m. on talkradio.nyc.
Franklin McElroy, host of the new podcast, Gateway to the Smokies. It airs on talkradio.nyc every Tuesday night from 6 p.m. to 7. Every episode is dedicated to memorable experiences in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park and surrounding areas. This show features experts and locals who will expound upon the richness of culture, history, and adventure that awaits you in the Smokies. Tune in every Tuesday from 6 p.m. to 7 on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.